This is Tuesday evening, August the 26th. This is Truth for Today, Weekly Bible Class. And tonight, our first part of our session will start with 2 Samuel, the 20th chapter, verse 14. 2 Samuel 20, 14. And we'll find our place. That takes us down about page 457 in your companion Bible. Now, we've just been talking about some of the troubles that David has had in his kingdom, the rebellion, and so on. And, of course, we know that from how he had behaved himself and so on, that there was trouble in his household, and he had to suffer many things. Yet a man after God's own heart. I suppose we would say that David made a number of mistakes. Although he confessed and said that he had sinned, maybe we had to read it for that. But he did follow after the Lord. He didn't go into idolatry. He didn't deny the Lord at any time. And he seemed to make an effort, a great effort, to live and reign righteously. Now, in this chapter 20, it started out with a man by the name of Sheba, who was turning against David. And so, some men were sent out to look after him and catch him. And in the process of this, Joab killed Amasa. And Joab hasn't done too well, and we'll find what happens to him after a while. But they were looking for Sheba, and so they went through all the tribes of Israel, and to Abel, and to Beth Maacha, all of Berites, and they were gathered together and went also after him, that is, after Sheba. Now, verse 15, and they came and besieged him in Abel of Beth Maacha, and they cast up a bank against the city, and he stood in the trench, and all the people who were with Joab battered the wall to throw it down. So they're going to tear down the walls of the city and take it just to get this one man. And he was a rebel against David. Then cried a wise woman out of the city, "Hear, hear, say, I pray you, unto Joab, come near hither, that I may speak with thee." Now notice a wise woman in the city. And when he has come near unto her, the woman said, "Art thou Joab?" And he answered, "I am he." Then she said unto him, "Hear the words of thine handmaid." And he answered, "I do hear." And she spake, saying, "They were wont to speak in old time, saying, They shall surely ask counsel of Abel." And so they ended the matter. At Abel, now this is the city here, they asked counsel there. It seems to have been a place where people could come and get advice. And she says, "I am one of them that are peaceable and faithful in Israel. Thou seekest to destroy a city and a mother in Israel. Why wilt thou swallow up the inheritance of the Lord?" And Joab answered and said, "Far be it from me, or far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. The matter is not so, but a man of Mount Ephraim, Sheba, the son of Bichri, by name, hath lifted up his hand against the king, even against David. Deliver him only, and I will depart from the city." And the woman said unto Joab, "Behold, his head shall be thrown to thee over the wall." Well, we've had other stories about like this too, and it's a good way to settle a thing and end. Then the woman went unto all the people in her wisdom, and they cut off the head of Sheba, the son of Bichri, and cast it out to Joab. And he blew a trumpet, and they retired from the city, every man to his tent. And Joab returned to Jerusalem unto the king. Well, that settled that matter, maybe. Now Joab was over all the host of Israel. And Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the Cherethites and over the Pelethites. And Adoram was over the tribute. And Jehoshaphat, son of Ahilud, was recorder. And Sheba the scribe, and Zadok, and Abiathar were the priests. And Ira also, the Jerite, was the chief ruler about David. This was summing up some of the main people at the end of this chapter 20. We have more summings up as we come. And at the end of David's reign, getting some of the things straightened out finally. Now we go into chapter 21 here, and this is not in chronological order as you will see in your Bible. It came a little bit earlier than some of the chapters we just had. Now there was a famine in the days of David, 3 years, year after year. And David inquired of the Lord, and the Lord answered, "It is for Saul and for his bloody house, because he slew the Gibeonites." Now we remember who the Gibeonites were. And Israel went into the land. These people came with old clothes on and bottles that were old, about empty, and so on, saying that they were from afar and they wanted to make peace with Israel and settle down. So Israel did. Here they were from Gibeon, a nearby city, and they were part of the Amorites. Well, they had made their word with them that they would look after them and take them in, so Israel let them have their city of Gibeon and sung about it, and they were good friends to Israel from that time on. But Saul was overzealous, and he killed a number of the Gibeonites, knowing that they were of the Canaanitish blood, paid no attention to any covenant that had been made with them with Israel. And the king, that is David, called the Gibeonites and said unto them, now the Gibeonites were not of the children of Israel, but of the remnant of the Amorites. And the children of Israel had sworn unto them, and Saul sought to slay them in his zeal for the children of Israel and Judah. Wherefore David said unto the Gibeonites, "What shall I do for you? And wherewith shall I make the atonement, that ye may bless the inheritance of the Lord?" And the Gibeonites said unto him, "We will have no silver nor gold of Saul, nor of his house. Neither for us shall thou kill any man in Israel." And he said, "Of what ye shall say, that will I do for you." And they answered the king, "A man that consumed us, and devised against us, that we should be destroyed from remaining in any of the coasts of Israel. Let seven men of your sons be delivered unto us, and we will hang them up unto the Lord and give you a soul, whom the Lord did choose." And the king said, "I will give them." But the king spared Mephibosheth. Remember, we talked about him recently. He was crippled in his feet. David had him in his table. He was the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, because of the Lord's oath was between them, between David and Jonathan, the son of Saul. But the king took the two sons of Rizpah, the daughter of Elah, that she bare unto Saul, Armoni and Mephibosheth, and the five sons of Michael, the daughter of Saul, whom she brought up for Adiel, the son of Barzillai, the Mepholathite. And he delivered them to the hands of the Gibeonites, and they hanged them in a hill before the Lord. And they fell all seven together, and were put to death in the days of harvest, in the first days in the beginning of barley harvest. So that takes care of that. And Rizpah, the daughter of Elah, took sackcloth and spread it for her upon the rock from the beginning of harvest until water dropped upon them out of heaven, and suffered neither the birds of the air to rest on them by day, nor the beasts of the field by night. And it was told David what Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, the concubine of Saul, had done. And David went and took the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan, his son, from the men of Jabesh-Gilead, which had stolen them from the street of Bethlehem, where the Philistines had hanged them, and the Philistines of Samuel and Jehovah. And he brought up from thence the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan, his son, and they gathered the bones of them that were hanged. And the bones of Saul and Jonathan, his son, buried they in the country of Benjamin, in Zelah, in the sepulchre of Kish, his father, as Kish was the father of Saul. And they performed all that the king commanded. And after that, God was entreated for the land. That is, he didn't have any more famine for them. So that settled that problem. A lot of things were settled when people get mixed up in things. Moreover, the Philistines had yet war again with Israel. And David went down, and his servants with him, and fought against the Philistines, and David waxed faint. Now watch this part of the story. This is catching up some way back. And Ishbi-benob, which was one of the sons of the giant. Now there were five sons of the giant. Anak, or whatever his name was. The weight of whose spear weighed 300 shekels of brass in weight, he being girded with a new sword, thought to have slain David. For David had killed his brother Goliath. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, succored him, that is, helped David, and smote the Philistine and killed him. Then the men of David sware unto him, saying, Thou shalt go no more out with us to battle, that thou quench not the light of Israel. So now here is Goliath and his brother Ishbi-benob have been killed. At least three yet to go. Remember, David had five stones. And it came to pass after this that there was again a battle with the Philistines at Gob. Then Shebechai, the Hushathite, slew Seth. There's his name, another one of the giants, which were the sons of the giant. That's three of them. And there was again a battle in Gob with the Philistines, where Ethanan, the son of Jer-Oregim, a Bethlehemite, slew the brother of Goliath, or that's in italics, it slew Goliath, another one by the same name, the Gittite, the staff of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. So that's four of them. And there was yet a battle in Gath, where there was a man of great stature, that had on every hand six fingers, and on every foot six toes, 24 in number, and he again was born of the giant. And when he defied Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shemaiah, the brother of David, slew him. These four were born to the giant in Gath, and fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. Along with Goliath, that makes all five of them now disposed of. And notice that these four fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. Alright, that may tell us something too. Giants, men of renown, with a shady background at the birth, having connection with fallen angels and the like. And Israel has had all of her time in the land to deal with this sort of thing. Satan was surely trying to trap them and destroy them and do anything he could. Now David's going to sing a song. And we have this recorded here. Now this, I think, is the same thing as Psalm 18. 18 was edited and a little different, but then since it was the same author, he had a right to make any changes he wanted to. So you might sometime take a study of the two and compare. And he said, and here's the song, The Lord is my rock, and my fortress, and my deliverer. You probably remember the song, A Mighty Fortress is Our God, written by Martin Luther in the German. Ein fester Berg ist unser Gott. And so the Lord is spoken of as a rock a number of times. Flying over in our New Testament is spoken of as a rock, furnished water in the wilderness. And, of course, that was going back to the Old Testament. And my fortress. Now, really, that is just about what the Psalm says, a mighty fortress is our God. And my deliverer, the God of my rock, in him will I trust. He is my shield, and the horn is the strength of my salvation. And shield, of course, is salvation, as you find it in Ephesians 6. My high tower high tower, it'd be on a fortress, where they could congregate and shoot out the arrows of the enemy, and my refuge, a place to free me, my Savior, thou savest me from violence. I will call on the Lord, who is worthy to be praised, so shall I be saved from mine enemy. When the ways of death compassed me, the floods of ungodly men made me afraid. The sorrows of hell, the grave, compassed me about. The snares of death went before me or prevented me. In my distress, I called upon the Lord and cried to my God. And he did hear my voice out of his temple. And my cry did enter into his ears. Then the earth shook and trembled. Now remember, this was all highly poetical. Some of these things did not literally happen, so it didn't conceal themselves, but as far as David is concerned, they happened. Truly, the foundations of heaven moved and shook because he was wroth. Then went up a smoke out of his nostrils, and fire out of his mouth devoured. Coals were kindled by it. He bowed the heavens also, and came down, and darkness was under his feet. Darkness was under his feet, that is, he was overcoming darkness. He rode upon a cherub, and did fly, and he was seen upon the wings of the wind. And he made darkness pavilions round about him, dark waters and thick clouds of the stars. Though the brightness before him were coals of fire kindled, the Lord thundered from heaven, and the Most High uttered his voice. And he sent out sorrows and scattered them, lightning and discomfited them. And the channels of the sea appeared. The foundations of the world were discovered, were uncovered, at the rebuking of the Lord, at the blast of the breath of his nostrils. He sent from above. He took me. He drew me out of many waters. He delivered me from my strong enemy and from them that hated me, for they were too strong for me. So David realized he needed help. They prevented me in the day of my calamity. That is, they got ahead of me in the day of my calamity. But the Lord was my stay, my anchor. He brought me forth into a large place. He delivered me because he delighted in me. The Lord rewarded me according to my righteousness. According to the cleanness of my hands hath he recompensed me. For I have kept the ways of the Lord, and have not wickedly departed from my God. For all his judgments were before me. And as for his statutes, I did not depart from them. I was also upright before him, and have kept myself from mine iniquity. I don't know what David is particularly boasting here of how good he was and so on. He's simply showing a relationship between himself and God and how this relationship worked out. He said he had not wickedly departed from his God. He had not worshipped other gods, and he had not neglected his God. So there was fellowship. With the merciful thou wilt show thyself merciful. And with the upright man, thou wilt show thyself upright. With the pure, thou wilt show thyself pure. And with the forward, thou wilt show thyself unsavory. Not tasting broken. Then the afflicted people thou wilt save. But thine eyes are upon the haughty, that thou mayest bring them down. Thou art my lamp. In the fortress, strength and so on. But thou art my lamp, O Lord, this is the light, and the Lord will lighten my darkness. For thee I have run through a troop, that is a great many enemies, but my God have I leaped over, by my God have I leaped over a wall, showing that God gave him strength in time of battle. As for God, his way is perfect. The word of the Lord is tried. So is a buckler. He is a buckler to them that trust in him. For who is God, save the Lord? And who is a rock, save our God. God is my strength and power, and he maketh my way perfect. He maketh my feet like hind feet, they are swift, and setteth me upon my high places. He teacheth my hands to war, so that a bow of steel is broken by mine arms. A bow of steel. Some people might look rather questioning at that, but men knew how to make steel back in those days. They didn't put it in a furnace to burn the carbon out of it either. They heat it and pound it and beat it and pound it. Work with it until they get the carbon burned out of it. And Damascus, centuries and centuries ago, was famous for its Damascus steel, especially swords. And it was said that those swords were made of such pure steel with the carbon taken out that they could be bent with a point clear back to the hilt and they flipped back in place. That's pretty good steel. Of course, we know back around the time of the French Revolution and play times like that, that they were using bows of steel on their crossbows. But here is talking about steel here way back many years before Christ. Now, David was ruling about a little over 900 years before Christ. I just brought this in here because people sometimes sort of think that these people were so backward then they wouldn't know anything about these things. Well, they knew a lot more than what we know that they knew, because civilizations have been destroyed by barbarians so many times and all records gone that we don't know what the ancient people did do, except in what we're digging up. Well, we're gone. Thou hast also given me the shield of thy salvation, and thy gentleness hath made me great. Thou hast enlarged my steps under me, so that my feet did not slip. I have pursued mine enemies and destroyed them, and turned not again till I consumed them. And I have consumed them, and wounded them, that they could not arise. Yea, they have fallen under my feet. For thou hast girded me with strength to battle. Them that rose up against me hast thou subdued under me. Thou hast given me the necks of mine enemies, that I might destroy them that hate me. Given them necks, used to be it as a sign of subduing somebody, having him down on the ground and put the foot on his neck. And so he had him under power. They looked, but there was none to save. Even unto the Lord, but he answered them not. Then did I beat them as small as the dust of the earth. I did stamp them as the mire of the street, and did spread them abroad. Thou also hast delivered me from the strivings of my people, Israel. Not only his enemies abroad and so on, but there were strivings among his own people. Remember, Saul was after him pretty close 38 years, pounding him all over the wilderness and so on. Thou hast kept me to be head of the heathen. It's getting prophetic now, isn't it? A people which I knew not shall serve me. Yes, someday they will, because David is to be restored also to his throne during the millennium, as well as Christ. Strangers shall submit themselves unto me. Now here is something rather prophetic too, that in that day, nations that are strange will submit themselves. And this idea of submitting here is only pretended submission, because they know better and to openly revolt against it. So they're pretend to be in submission. And as soon as they hear, there shall be obedient unto me. Strangers shall fade away, and they shall be afraid out of their close places. Now these folks will rebel, to be taken care of in the millennium at the end of it. The Lord liveth, and blessed be my rock, and exalted be the God of the rock of my salvation. Notice the rock of my salvation again. When he's talking about a rock, he's not talking about a little stone like he took out of the brook to kill Goliath. He's talking about a fortress, one that can't be moved. Now, of course, with me, having lived a few years ago, when we heard more about some of these things we do now, I was always wondering about the great rock of Gibraltar. That is a massive structure, entrance to the Mediterranean Sea. And you wouldn't move that very easily. It's all honeycombed with passages and ports and so on to guard the way to the Mediterranean Sea. I'm just giving that as an example here. And says, God is a rock, my salvation. It is God that avengeth me, that bringeth down the people under me, and that bringeth me forth from mine enemies. Thou also hast lifted me up on high above them that rose up against me. Thou hast delivered me from the violent man. Therefore, I will give thanks unto thee, O Lord, among the heathen. Notice that. Among the heathen. I will sing praises unto thy name. He is the power of salvation for his king, and showeth mercy to his anointed, unto David, and to his seed forevermore. Now these be the last words of David. This is chapter 23. And David, the son of Jesse, said, and this goes on, really, with this song here, and if you will note the structural outlines in your companion Bible to see how these are fitted together. And the man who was raised up on high, the anointed of the God of Jacob, the sweet promise of Israel, said, now David's talking about himself. He was raised up on high, David was. And he was anointed by the God of Jacob. Notice the use of the Lord Jacob, as Jacob met the Lord at the ford. And the sweet psalmist of Israel, that is David, said, well, I just wonder sometimes. We read of some of the failures of David, plots against him and so on, and yet, he wrote the most of the 119 Psalms we have. They were written by, some of them are written by other people. Hezekiah, possibly. But Moses wrote at least two of them, Psalms 90 and 91. There may be others. Of course, one of the favorites is Psalm 23. We mustn't forget those, some of the others. We were talking about here about the millennium, and they feigned obedience and strife. You find that in Psalm 2, which gives you a picture of the millennial rule. Psalm 84 is a good one for you to study. Now, we spoke of Psalm 23. 22, 23, and 24 go together. You can't separate those three very well. Psalm 19 tells about the message in the stars. And we can go on and on. Interesting thing is that Psalm 119, the longest of the bunch, each section begins with a different letter of the Hebrew alphabet, and in order. Not only the section begins with it, but each line of that particular section begins with that letter of the alphabet. And there are 10 words used in there concerning the law, the commandments, so on, of the Lord. 10 words. And that is a mention of this in one of those 10 words is found in every verse of Psalm 119, excepting possibly one. Now that is certainly giving honor to the Word of God. It might be a good idea for us to take note of that and see if we are giving the honor to the Word of God that David did in Psalm 119. Now we start this out in 23:2, and here is a little definition of inspiration. The Spirit of the Lord spake by me, and his word was in my tongue. Well, that's inspiration. All scripture is given by inspiration of God, and this is how it is. And furthermore, it's profitable. If people knew how profitable, they'd pay more attention to it. But somehow or other, the word profitable doesn't mean much to them when it comes to the Bible. The God of Israel said, the rock of Israel spake to me, he that ruleth over men must be just, ruling in the fear of God. And he shall be as the light of the morning when the sun rises, even a morning without clouds, as a tender grass springing out of the earth, like clear shining after rain. Although my house be not so with God, yet, David and Mithy hasn't been perfect, hasn't he? Yet he hath made me an everlasting covenant. And of course, we have touched upon that from time to time. And David never forgot that covenant. Ordered in all things, and sure. For this is all my salvation, and all my desire. Although he make it not to grow. But the sons of Belial shall all of them as thorns be thrust away, because they cannot be taken for pain. But the man that shall touch them must be fenced with iron and the staff of a spear. If you're going to deal with thorns, you have to be pretty well armored and use a long staff to reach them with. In other words, be touching with a 10-foot pole with a spear on the end of it. And they shall be utterly burned with fire in the same way. Well, that's the end of David's eulogy of God. Now we go into the honor roll. There are men, mighty men with David, who were known, and their names are put down for us. It's rather surprising that some were not on the list, and it's surprising that some were on the list. I suppose that will be so with us when the day comes. Now these be the names of the mighty men whom David had. The Tachmonite that sat in the chief seat among the captains, the same as Adino, the Edomite. Now I might say here, if you look at your outline here, you have two sets of three. This Adino is the first one. And then there are 31, making 37 in all. He lifted up his spear against 800, whom he slew at one time. Must have been a mighty man. And after him was Eliezer, the son of Dodo, Ahohite, one of the three mighty men with David, when they defied the Philistines that were gathered together to battle, and the men of Israel were gone away. He arose and smote the Philistines until his hand was weary, and his hand clave unto the sword. Worked with that sword so much his hand had gotten almost paralyzed and stuck to it. And the Lord wrought a great victory that day, and the people, Israel, returned after him only to spoil. They all ran, but after he got the victory, then they came to get the spoil. And after him was Shammah, the son of Egi, the Hararite. And the Philistines were gathered together into a troop, for there was a piece of ground full of lentils. Not too sure about these lentils, but possibly some kind of beans, a bean field. Probably about the same kind of beans that Jacob got from gave to Esau for the birthright. And the people fled from the Philistines. That is, Israel fled from the Philistines. But he, that is Shammah, stood in the midst of the ground and defended it and slew the Philistines, and the Lord wrought a great victory. And three of the 30 chief went down and came to David in the harvest time under the cave of Adullam. And the troop of the Philistines pitched in the valley of Rephaim. Now we've had this before, and so this is rehashing what we have learned. And David was then in a hole, that is, a sort of a garrison or whatever. And the garrison of Philistines was then in Bethlehem. And David longed and said, "Oh, that one would give me drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate." Now, I don't know whether David was out of water and was real thirsty, or whether he was homesick for the water from Bethlehem, because, you see, that was his homeland. He was of the tribe of Judah. And the three mighty men break through the host of Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate, and took it, and brought it to David. Nevertheless, he would not drink thereof, but poured it out unto the Lord. And he said, "Be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Is not this the blood of the men that went in jeopardy or in danger of their lives? Therefore he would not drink it. These things did these three mighty men." So much for them. Now here's another three. "And Abishai, the brother of Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was chief among three. And he lifted up his spear against 300 and slew them, and had the name among three. Was he not most honorable of three? Therefore he was their captain, albeit he came not unto the first three." He was in the second three. "And Benaiah, or Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man of Kabzeel, who had done many acts, slew two lion-like men of Moab. He went down also and slew a lion in the midst of a pit in time of snow." And these are all things that were known to Israel. "And he slew an Egyptian, a goodly man, strong man. An Egyptian had a spear in his hand, but he went down to him with a staff, and plucked the spear out of the Egyptian's hand, and slew him with his own spear." Brave. "These things did Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and had the name among the three mighty men. He was more honorable than the 30, but he attained not to the first three, and David set him over his guard." So there are two sets of three. Now here we come with a list now. Asahel, the brother of Joab, was one of the 30. Ahinan, the son of Dodo of Bethlehem, Shammah the Herodite, Elika the Herodite, Helez the Peltite, Ir the son of Ichas the Tekoite, Abiezer the Anathothite, Mahamani the Hushathite, Zalman the Ahothite, Mahari the Netophathite, Caleb the son of Bana, a Netophathite, Ittai the son of Ibni out of Gibeah are the children of Benjamin. Benaiah the Pirathonite, Hidai of the brooks of Gash, Abi Albon the Arbathite, Ismava the Barhumite, Eliab the Shalbanite, are the sons of Jason, Jonathan, Shammah the Herathite, Ahiam the son of Sherar the Herathite, Eliphelet the son of Adeshai, the son of the Machathite, Eliam the son of Ahithophel, the Gileonite, notice the son of Ahithophel, related to David through his wife, Tezri the Carmelite, Harai the Arbite, Igal the son of Nathan the Zobah, Bani the Gadite, Zelek the Ammonite, Mahari the Berethite, armor bearer to Joab the son of Zeruiah, Ira an Ithrite, Gareb an Ithrite, Uriah the Hittite, the last one. 37 in all. Well, you'll note that Uzziah, who was faithful to David to death, got his name on this list. But Joab named his name. His brother is. Well, it's rather interesting. And now there's another one who didn't get in the risk list. And I think that's rather important to think on. Maybe you wouldn't guess. One that everybody thought would be on the list. One that everybody thought would be David's commander-in-chief. He was a man who loved David as he loved his own soul. Jonathan, the son of Saul. And why didn't Jonathan get in this list? Everybody expected him to be David's commander-in-chief of the armies when David became king. Everything pointed to that, excepting there was one little fault. When David was hunted like a wild beast out in the wilderness, Jonathan did not go out and suffer with him. He stayed in the palaces of his father. Remember, we have today, 2 Timothy, if we suffer or endure, we shall reign with him. Jonathan didn't. That's a good lesson for us. Now, we may have time here to start just a little bit on this chapter 24. And again, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. Now, we had one incident here a while back where there was a famine in the land. And he moved David against them to say, go number Israel and Judah. Now, this was putting it probably in a little different way. God allowed this to be done. He didn't make David do it. For the king said to Joab, the captain of the host, which was with him, go now through all the tribes of Israel, from Dan even to Beersheba, and number ye the people, that I may know the number of my people. And Joab said unto the king, now the Lord thy God add unto the people, how many soever there be, 100-fold, and that the eyes of my lord the king may see it. But why doth my lord the king delight in this thing? Why are you going to go out and get the numbers? Why do you want to do that? Now, Joab showed a little bit of gumption at that place, at least. He told David, he says, you can see that they're multiplying and so on. You've got plenty of them. Why number them? Notwithstanding, the king's word prevailed against Joab and against the captains of the host. And Joab and the captains of the host went out from the presence of the king to number the people of Israel. Not a number, that is, holding a census. And so David is having to take a census of the people of Israel. However, you will note later on that this census had to do with men of war, men who were able to fight, carry a sword. That would be men of 20 years and above who were able. And these men passed over Jordan and pitched in Aror on the right side of the city that lieth in the midst of the river of Gad and toward Jazer. And they came to Gilead, that's on the east bank, and to the land of Pathshim-Hodshi. And they came to Dan-Zin and about to Zidon. And came to the stronghold of Tyre, and to all the cities of the Hivites, and of the Canaanites, and they went off to the south of Judah, even to Beersheba. So when they had gone through all the land, they came to Jerusalem at the end of 9 months and 20 days. And Joab gave up the sum of the number of the people unto the king. And there was in Israel 800,000 valiant men that drew the sword, and the men of Judah were 500,000 men. And we won't have to cut off here till next week for this part of the lesson. All right, we are ready to go on with the second part of our lesson tonight. And we were down in Acts 27, at verse 41. Acts 27, verse 41. Now, if you remember, the ship was grounded, and there were quite a number of things happening at the island of Malta, or Melita, whichever you please to call it. And so, we will try to catch up with the story here. This is 27:41, page 1656, I believe. We were just talking about verse 40 the last day, and when they had taken up the anchors, they committed themselves into the sea and loosed the rudder bands. Now, a ship at that time was guided not by one rudder, as most of them are now, but by two paddles on either side. And these had been bound up as they are when they're at anchor, so that they won't be trailing the water, and so to be safe. And they hoisted up the mainsail to the wind. Now, this isn't exactly the mainsail because they'd thrown that overboard. This is the foresail. And they made toward the shore. So they're letting her go before the wind, right to the shore, trying to hit this little creek, as they call it. Really a strait. And falling into a place where two seas met, they ran the ship aground. Now, where two cheese meet is where the riptide going back out meets the tide coming in. And as a usual thing, they make a sandbar. It may be below the surface of water and quite often above. We find these along many, many coasts of land in the world where there's sand,